to bed.
Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we finally figured out how to say our names right correctly. Okay. Anyway, yeah. And if today is October 7th, 2017, you're certainly welcome to give us a call in here at 254-773-1400. And make a comment or ask a question about anything to do with economics or investing. There are some significant issues that are floating around out there that I don't think are very well reported.
Can we report on the lack of reporting?
We can, but mostly I think we just need to talk about the issues.
Okay, let's talk about the issues.
And they have to do with taxes and revenue and such. Let's start with the practicalities. And this gets deeper and deeper and deeper as we go into it. Puerto Rico is about to go totally broke, meaning I read a report or listened to a report this morning. I haven't been able to personally verify it, that the government of Puerto Rico is, once they make pay at the end of this month, is broke, out of money, zero, nothing left. And it has nothing to do with the FEMA money that's going down there. Congress approved $15 billion, and part of that is going to go to the about $95 billion needed to restore the situation in Puerto Rico. The problem is that they didn't authorize any money to go to the Puerto Rican government, and the Puerto Rican government was running on hand-to-mouth, just barely. Meaning they would collect taxes and immediately spend them, but they can't collect taxes anymore because their infrastructure is down. So they are not receiving any money coming in, but they've still got to pay the police and the fire departments and all the people who work for the government. And so the treasurer of Puerto Rico reportedly, and I want to emphasize this is reportedly, I only had it from one source, at the end of this month will shut down unless Congress passes a specific bill granting either some form of loan guarantee, in which case they'd have to move pretty quickly, or just giving some money to Puerto Rico to spend. And there have been members of Congress, as well as the president, who've said that ain't going to happen. If the government of Puerto Rico shuts down at the end of this month, the humanitarian disaster will exacerbate very nicely, because with no police, it's going to get kind of bumpy down there. That's the nicest thing that I could possibly say about it. That's a serious problem, but let's back up. Why is there this serious problem? And why is Puerto Rico $70 billion in debt that it has no money to pay? And secondly, it's important to note who holds that debt, who holds those bonds. And before we get into the why Puerto Rico is in such debt, it's important to note that about 25% of the Puerto Rican bonds are held by hedge funds, and the hedge funds are betting on the fact that the government is going to bail them out and pay off the bonds in full, and they've filed lawsuits. But basically, all bets are off at this point. And the second thing, the rest of the debt is largely held by high-yield mutual funds, ETFs, and people in the United States proper.
People said, I like municipal bonds, they're tax exempt, and we can get a high interest rate if we go to Puerto Rico. Well, high interest rate means high risk.
A lot of folks bought the bill of goods that were sold to them by a stockbroker or financial advisor who said, looky here, you can get 11% tax-free Puerto Rican bond.
6 or 7% is what they were saying. 6 or 7%, and that's completely unheard of. What? Well, I should get that. Well, and why are they willing to pay you that when other people aren't?
Well,
because they're in danger.
And a lot of those bonds were proclaimed to be safe because they were insured by one of the municipal bond insurance companies. And the stock prices of the municipal bond insurance companies all took a nosedive right after President Trump said, we're just going to have to get rid of the debt. Basically, they would be on the hook for billions of dollars of debt that they don't have money to cover all of the municipal bond failures just in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So we could see high-yield mutual funds, high-yield ETFs, high-yield bonds in general, and hedge funds falling like flies.
Well, flies generally go up. Maybe rocks. Flies, I mean, even the name.
Falling like hailstones.
There we go, hailstones. But not in a tornado, because they go sideways.
Hailstones go up and down and all that, but they eventually fall.
Okay, the end result is that Puerto Rico might have big ripple effects throughout the municipal bond world.
And we could literally see all three municipal bond insurance companies go bankrupt just over Puerto Rico.
Here's an additional danger here. It's not just Puerto Rico. It's not just the generalized municipal bonds. Illinois is still in really bad shape, extremely bad shape on their debt-wise area. Their municipalities are in trouble. The state itself is in trouble. It's likely that bonds on the open market for municipalities that are already in trouble are also going to drop through the floor as far as their price goes, as people are trying to get out of them once they recognize that bonds are dangerous. So we mentioned this a little bit last hour, as a just 5 seconds or so, that bonds, people are buying right now. There's an inflow money to not just bond funds, but to high yield municipal bond funds. This is exactly what we're talking about, that people are completely unaware of the risk that they're taking because they don't remember municipal bonds failing. That's just not something that's happened regularly, and it happens. That's something we have to recognize, that there are cities in Texas and in Arizona and in New Mexico that don't exist anymore, that existed 100 years ago, and some of them that issued bonds that they go away sometimes.
To give you some idea how bad the Puerto Rican situation is, again, I have not been able to personally validate this, but I've read two reports now that say that the debt to income ratio in Puerto Rico is worse than it is in Greece. They have 49 billion dollars they owe to retirees, and they don't have any money to cover it. I mean, you look down the list of things, and if retirees get first in line, which typically they do under U.S. law, there will be no money left over to pay anybody else. And Puerto Rico is capable of collapsing, and in its collapse, creating a very, very serious problem for the rest of the country. I mean, it's right on the cusp, like at the end of this month, 3 weeks from now, of financial collapse. And a total financial collapse in Puerto Rico would result in secondary and tertiary and quaternary and quaternary effects that we can't even begin to forecast. For one thing, there would be a mass exodus of people from Puerto Rico into the United States, where they are instantly have full rights to all benefits and everything else as soon as they walk across
and
the border.
The president said something that under the right circumstances might be a good idea. When he said all the debt will be going away. You got to understand something specific in American law.
Well, actually, what he said is we got to wipe that out.
We got to wipe that out. The federal government doesn't have the ability to forgive debt owed to someone else. So if that were to happen, the federal government would have to step into a trusteeship for a bankruptcy for Puerto Rico. I'm all for that. We need a system in place in case we have a large municipality, a large state or territory go bankrupt. Illinois is teetering, and it keeps flirting and getting better and then flirting and getting better with bankruptcy. If we don't have a structure in place, well, there's no law that says how does a state go bankrupt? How does a territory go bankrupt? We need to make one.
That solution would have worked and still would work for Illinois because Illinois has tax revenue.
Right.
It won't work. That's the problem. It won't work for Puerto Rico because Puerto Rico has no tax revenue.
Well, that's kind of the other side of this. I mean, you can't just wipe out the debt and leave it at that, or what you've just done, it's kind of like you have a house fire and the insurance company pays off your mortgage. Well, that's nice. You paid off the mortgage, but now I have a slab with a bunch of burnt stuff on it that I have to clean off and build from scratch. You might not have to go get a new mortgage. Well, if you're retired.
But you can in some cases.
Yeah, if you're retired and you have no income coming in besides your pension, and you were counting on the fact that your mortgage was going to be paid off in 5 years, and the mortgage company just paid off your mortgage for you, which was not replacement value. Quite often, that's what they are obligated to do if you've got mortgage insurance and not other types of insurance. So this is the difference between mortgage insurance and replacement insurance.
So we have a potential crisis that could hit in 3 weeks. It's not, in my opinion, being reported on very well at all. And Congress is not looking at it or paying much attention to it. All I got to say is there is an underobserved crisis going on there. But there's another one that's brewing. And that is to say, how did Puerto Rico get into such debt and get into the position of having a shrinking population and not being able to pay their debts? And then when a disaster hit, facing total ruin. And the answer is they spent more money than they were taking in revenue consistently over a long period of time.
A long period of time. And now, they got more enthusiastic about it over time. Sounds kind of familiar with the federal government,
yeah,
actually.
And I'm interested in some calls on this, 773-1400. I would be interested in somebody who can explain to me the now Republican position in Congress that adding, quote, $1.5 trillion, and the Republican Party has agreed in both the House of Representatives, they've already passed the bill in the House, and in the Senate, that the Balanced Budget Act should be amended so that we can add $1.5 trillion to the deficit. We're running half a trillion a year now in order to cut everybody's taxes. Now, everybody agrees. You know, I mean, basically the members of Congress said, let's cut spending and let's not raise taxes. But there's no evidence of cut spending floating around in the budget discussions that are going on right now. And there is a lot of discussion of dramatically cutting taxes. But very, very, very little of what they call revenue recovery. In other words, closing tax deductions one by one, they're disappearing, the ones that they were talking about closing. So this is a real threat at this point, is the Republican Party, which traditionally has been anti-deficit spending and was willing to shut down the government in 2011 to reduce deficit spending, apparently has taken the position now with, quote, tax reform, end quote. And while I do think the reform is needed, while I do think there's changes are needed, I completely agree, and I certainly personally – I think Jake and I both personally love the fact that our taxes would get cut substantially under the proposal that went to Congress. there's a simple fact here. Unless we want to cut defense, Social Security, or Medicare dramatically, we can't afford to reduce the tax revenue to the federal government, or we will start, well, let's put it like this. A couple of different senators came out and said, based on the president's framework, which is, we don't know the details of what's going to come out of Congress, based on the president's framework, we would go from our current position of being about 76-78% or something of GDP in debt held by the public to 100% in a 10-year period. And that's not counting what we owe retirees. That's not counting what we owe Social Security recipients in the future.
There's a quick piece that can be done here, because rather than sounding like we're just complaining about what's being proposed, if John Carter's listening right now, tune in closely. There is a solution. The solution is you take the framework as it exists. You take the deductions that are proposed to go away. You take the standard deduction, which is doubling. You do that part, but you don't change the tax brackets yet. That needs to be simplified too. But what this would do is right now about 60% of the United States files with the standard deduction. That means 40% of the people have extremely complex taxes. You've got to do all the deductions and Schedule A, and the fact that we have to have schedule letter combinations and you don't know which one you need to file in advance is a problem. So the fact that it is so complex and difficult to do your taxes, if we just do that part, then 95% of the people in the United States that file taxes under 2015's tax returns would file the standard tax return. They wouldn't have to go into all the detail about mortgage interest and all that stuff. It wouldn't come up because they wouldn't need it. Their standard deduction would cover the whole thing. If then we kept the same tax brackets, revenue would be about the same, but it'd be a lot easier to do our taxes. That just the simple fact that it's easier to do our taxes will create an environment where it's easier to be profitable. We would know how much our expenses are going to be in advance. Right now, we have to make our income before we can determine what our liability is. That's a problem. If you simplify first, then figure out the rest of it later, that's fine. I don't know how palatable that will be. It's kind of a partial yes to the code, but it would work.
The issue is that if I read the speeches and the commentary correctly, the people who are running the Congress right now want to get something passed, and by offering everybody a tax cut and no spending cuts, they've got something they're quite confident will be very popular with the public. But the problem is, these are the same people who said we're going to go bankrupt if we keep doing this. Well, that's basically, folks, that's what Puerto Rico did. They increased spending and cut taxes.
And they kept saying we got to lower taxes to make our growth faster so that we can make more tax revenue. And then they would tax wealthy people more, and then the wealthy people all left. So yeah, and we've got a caller on 773-1400.
You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello, caller.
Man, we scared him off.
It scared me off.
That was a wrong number.
About to leave.
Anyway, and I'd love somebody to call in. I've been searching. If Lynn Woolley's listening, Lynn, call in and explain to me how increasing the deficit dramatically when we're at full employment is going to bring new jobs.
I think he's against it.
Well, I mean, but he is the spokesperson in this district, at least for the.
I think where we're talking about it, got the call coming in now. So let's see who's going to say it. Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, this is me.
Hi, me.
Someone said once that the only power a politician has is the power to spend money. And as long as they can pass feel-good legislation that helps buy them a vote back into office, that's what they're going to do. So how in the world do we control feel-good legislation that raises the debt?
That doesn't feel good.
I don't. The point is that we don't feel the debt going up. And frankly, the economists I've read about this is pretty fascinating. They said if the tax cuts go through, if they pass, it will put a lot more money in the economy, no doubt about it. It will, but the problem is that there aren't any more people to employ. So what will happen is prices will go up. Well, that will be the trigger that could start inflation, which means that the Federal Reserve will start raising interest rates to fight inflation, which is their mandate from Congress. And that will cause further borrowing by the United States government to be more expensive. Man, we could get into a tailspin on this one pretty quickly.
There's something called elasticity of demand. Elasticity of supply. We have no elasticity of supply. That means how much can we stretch to make more? If there is a lot more money and suddenly we all decide to start hiring more people, we don't have a supply of more people. So we have no elasticity there.
So we would start competing for the people and raising the prices.
Right, and that is the ingredients to inflation.
And even if we don't get inflation, what that will do is it will just send more jobs overseas because we can't afford to hire people here.
Right, so the end result of this is there are ways, if taxes are cut, for us to grow. The thing is that American business people don't all gather in one big room and say, this is the way to do what we should do with this money to prevent inflation. Instead, they go about in what's their own best interest, which is great. This is another one of those things that if we do a sudden change with a big result, we're going to cause some difficulties down the road. Now, there are ways of approaching it, but it needs to be done intelligently.
You ask the question, what can we do about it? I tell you what, if enough of the people in Bell County who elected John Carter will write him and say to him, you cut my taxes and thereby increase the deficit, and we'll find somebody else to do your job.
It's really hard to get on that bandwagon, though. It's really hard to say.
Everybody loves to have their taxes
cut. Don't cut my taxes, but it's very much like if you decide you're getting near retirement, and your employer says, you have an option to go part-time if you'd like. You can do this if you want. You're going to get your payment cut a little bit by going part-time, but you can do this, and you'll get to spend more time with your family. And in the practice of spending more time with your family, you decide to go on 12 vacations and start spending more.
You know,
and your pay got cut, and you're still spending more. Well, that's not good for your long-term retirement. And it's really hard the employer in this case is us. We are the employer of the government. We're the ones that pay the bills. And if they say to us, hey, we don't need as much money anymore, we're not that we're going to stop spending the money. We're actually going to increase the amount that we spend, but we don't need as much from you. And we all go, oh, that's great. We're still going to be the ones holding the bill at the end of the day.
Well,
My point is, if the local school board is passing more bond issues, and you're voting for the kiddos, it's still good legislation.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the school board's raising taxes. Well, the city needs more taxes. Well, the federal government, they've got to have more welfare spending. So, but anytime a population learns that they can vote themselves benefits, then it's over. And that's what's happening to us right now. All of these different entities are passing feel-good legislation that appeals to the voting public, and that's how they get voted back into office. I'm sure that's what Puerto Rico did.
It is exactly what Puerto Rico did. And the point is that I'll just be upfront and tell you that my forecast right now is that about somewhere between 10 and 13 years from now, we're going to have a major recession. That could be a depression.
Major.
Because historically, we just do that. I mean, there's a cyclical nature to this. And I realize how very, very unpopular it is what I'm about to say.
Yeah.
We need to raise taxes right now. We're at full employment. The economy is running along very nicely. Companies across the board are having trouble to figure out what to do with all the cash they have. This is the point where you raise taxes and begin to pay down the debt so that you'd be able to go out and borrow.
You're never going to get elected.
You'd be able to run a deficit if you need to when the recession – there will be another recession. When it's going to be, I don't know, but and we will eventually have another severe recession. And at that point,
We need to be able to turn around when the bailouts are required,
I mean,
and have the money to do it with. It's, Texas is doing it, by the way. Texas does it, and people.
We have a rainy day fund.
And the reason why we have a rainy day fund is because our taxes on the sales taxes are higher than other people's sales taxes.
Let me ask you a question. If your prediction comes true and we have a severe recession or a depression, who do you think is going to own all the real estate in Temple, Texas? The school district?
No.
No.
Well, if you can't pay your school taxes, then somebody's going to own your house.
No, they don't. They
no. Here's the deal, because it's school taxes are based on the appraisal value, and the appraisal value goes down drastically when you can't sell your real estate.
Yeah, that's actually local taxes are pretty. I hate to argue with you on this, Con, but the local taxes are pretty reasonable right now.
That's just an example I'm using.
Yeah, but it's the federal level that I'm concerned about. Now, if I were in Illinois, I'd be concerned about the state.
Yeah,
but I'm not in Illinois, and the federal level, in my opinion, and this is opinion having done a lot of economic study and a lot of personal work as a business, owning a business, when things turn down, yeah, you borrow money to the best of your ability. We did that during each time we've had a major downturn in our business. We go out and borrow money to not deplete our cash reserve because cash reserves are for emergencies. And we run through the year on the borrowed money. And then once things turn good, we start paying our debts down. We run a surplus. We don't spend it. We pay our debts down. That's not just common sense. It's good economics. And by the way, it's Keynesian economics. And here we are in, by any definition, a very, very healthy economy talking about increasing our deficit. I am just astonished at this philosophy.
The whole concept here, and this is the easiest thing. If you have a structural deficit, what does that mean? It's a deficit that you have built into the future because you want to. A structural deficit, which means that you intend for the foreseeable future, as far forward as you can see, to spend more than you make. You shouldn't be surprised at some point when that bites you. Massachusetts, by the way. So that I'm not just talking Illinois.
Try Connecticut.
Or Connecticut.
Connecticut is the one in deep trouble right now.
Yeah, I'm using Massachusetts because they're semi-healthy. They're semi-healthy, but they have a structural deficit built into their budget. Every year they spend more than they make, and it's intrinsic to the way they build their budget. At some point, a big recession is going to happen and knock them down.
Well, and that's my point. As spending goes up and personal income goes down for whatever the reason is, whether it's a recession or whatever it is, when you increase spending and decrease income, something's got to give. And I'm not an economist. That's just a little bit of common sense.
Yeah, you are an economist.
Sense economist.
You've been running a business for a long time, and so you are a very good practical microeconomic expert.
If you take a government and you run it a little bit like a business, where you want to have, you don't want to run your customers off, you don't want to charge more than you need to maintain. But you don't want to promise more than you can pay for or borrow more than you can pay back. So that concept, Texas is doing a great job doing that. We have our taxes set it away so that when the recessions hit, not if they hit, but when they hit, we have surplus available. It's sitting in the bank. It's ready to be turned and used to reinvest in our own economy. That is the combination of Milton Friedman and Keynes. You put the two together, they're supposed to be politically on the opposite ends of the spectrum. But if they had known that they would be politically on the opposite ends of the spectrum when they were writing their things, they would have laughed, because 90% of their material is the same stuff back and forth. They say spend money when the economy is hurt at the governmental level. And save money when the economy is doing well. That's when you make it. You don't raise taxes when you're in a recession. You spend more money in a recession. Well, we did that part. We did TARP.
I,
But we're not doing the other end of it. We're doing well now.
Well, it's kind of like buy cheap and sell high.
Yeah.
You know, when the economy is rotten, well, that's a good time to spend a little money.
Yeah, and in a business, if you go through three months without a profit, but you know your business is long-term profitable and you don't want to get rid of your employees, then you need to have at least 3 months of payroll sitting on the side so that you don't have to lay off your highly trained employees so that you can try to rehire them when things get better. And that's the government's not doing that.
And you better hope that you have been buying things that you can pay for. I've been through quite a few downturns in my economy, and several times the only thing that saved me was I did not have five pickups with a note down at Ford Motor Credit. I bought what I could pay for. And everybody can't do that, and big business can't always do that. But I'm just saying that very, very often we make our own bid by wanting the latest, newest pickup truck along with the note. And so many people don't own anything. They just owe on it. And when our government gets to that point, the results are the same.
And it's you're right. What I don't understand, and maybe you can help clarify this to me, is the people in Congress who identify themselves as conservatives, just like you do, who have voted to agree to increase the deficit in order to get some legislation passed so they can get reelected in 2008. I mean, literally, that's what, off the record to the various major outlets, anonymously, congresspersons and members of their staff have said, we have to get something passed or we won't get reelected in 2008. And if we cut taxes, that will make people really happy and we'll get it passed and that'll get us elected. Maybe I'm missing something here, but instead of coming back here and saying, I want to cut your taxes, shouldn't our congressman be saying, if he had spine, I'm going to vote against any tax cut because we actually at this point need to be paying down our debts, not running up new ones?
I think the problem here is the general voting public does not look into what they're voting for.
Have you ever actually met them, by the way? I know I blame them for a lot of stuff, but I keep finding people that are specific. I need to find the general. I don't know where he is.
I have met some folks that have brains enough to know how to vote, but it's not every day out there. I mean, the general public... You know, if you say Eighth Amendment, Fourth Amendment, whatever, they don't have a clue what you're talking about. And if you're talking about deficit spending, they don't know what you're talking about. But if that congressman said, listen, I'm going to vote to increase payments to fatherless children, like you and I discussed not long ago, well, you know, they're going to vote for it. It's feel-good legislation.
Not in Bell County.
Not in Bell County, they won't. And the point, and this is my point, it's not the people who say, I want to give out more welfare. We don't have a congressman that says, I want to give out more welfare. We have a congressman that says, I want to cut the deficit, and he has pointedly not supported raising taxes, and I haven't read anything on it, but what I would say is, are we going to hold his feet to the fire if he says, let's cut taxes and increase the deficit? Or are we going to say, thank you very much, we really appreciate the lower taxes?
And this is my advice, it's not investment advice, it's just plain advice. If we do wind up getting a tax cut, it's going to feel great. I'm going to benefit. Jeff's going to benefit. We're going to have big smiles on our face.
Yeah, I calculated exactly how much Trump's tax plan would cut my taxes.
That's
exciting.
It's a big, big smile moment. Do something with that so that it's around when the other end of the equation hits.
Got it.
Because if you spend it all, this great boon from the government, this gift, you don't have to pay the tax because we're going to borrow it. Well, when they come back, and they will eventually have to come back and say, we need some money. Hopefully, you've used the money that they gave back to you or that they didn't take from you to create more money later. Otherwise, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. We're all going to be in a lot of trouble.
That is wisdom, what that guy just said.
Well, I think politicians, along with a lot of other people, they don't understand unintended consequences. They can't look further down the road to see what the effects of that legislation is going to ultimately be.
Wait, they know what all of the future holds. That's their congressman. I mean, that's how we elect them, right?
Supposedly.
I wish.
Well, now, actually, in order to get elected, you just said, I'm a-gonna a lot. You just say, I'm a-gonna a lot, and then you say something pleasant after that.
Yeah, I'm a-gonna do something nice for you. I'm going to do something nice for you. Give me a kiss of baby.
And for me, I'll do something nice for you.
And I think there's a really strong assumption by members of Congress that the public can't remember anything for 2 years.
Well, we were just talking about, I don't know about 2 years, but I lost the train of the conversation.
You know, seriously, I read somewhere that the national memory is 2 years and 3 months.
If that were true, we wouldn't reelect the House of Representatives every time.
I think our memory is shorter than that.
Well, I'm not going to be there today. I've got to go fight a speed trap ticket. But now I've gotten all this off of my chest, I'll turn y'all loose.
All right.
Thank you very much, Colonel.
Good luck with the speed trap. Don't get your foot stuck in it.
Okay. Be careful.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake.
McClure, and I think we need to play some commercials
yes,
or something. Telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400. If today is October 7th, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. Thank you very much, and we'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And just as sort of a side note here, if you want to sign up for our newsletter that we send out, you're certainly welcome to contact us either at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. Or
go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and sign up.
And every Friday, I work late, Jake works late, and we turn out a newsletter, and we talk about what happened during the week and kind of bring things up to speed. Just in case you miss our melodious voices, you can always figure out what's going on.
Yes, melodious. Right.
You know, it's we were talking about this. It is – Jake had an excellent idea just before the break, if you missed it. Let's just say that despite the fact that it will conceivably raise the deficit to unsustainable levels and we will eventually have to pay the price unpleasantly – the windfall that you get from the tax cuts, presuming that the tax cuts go through, you need to measure that. You need to look at it and really believe this and either put it into an insured savings or secure savings position or invest it relatively securely, relatively conservatively, because, 10 years from now, somewhere between 10 and 15 years from now, I would be astonished if we do not have a major recession and downturn, simply because we do them at that frequency all through history. It's not different this time.
Yeah.
No, the stock market is not overpriced. No, the economy is not going crazy, but it will.
Yeah, and if you line up all of our mandated expenses, Social Security, Medicare, looking at the federal pensions, whether that be defense or otherwise, you add them all up and you look at when is that going to really hit us? That's about 10, 15, 13 years, somewhere right in there. And we've got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, I'm on the air.
You are?
Okay. Hey, I was just listening to a little bit of your program, and I think it's real wise advice when you say, you know, you get a windfall, you invest it instead of just spending it. But as far as the government goes, I don't think the problem, if you look back to JFK and Reagan when they cut taxes, if they cut the right taxes, I think Reagan doubled the income of the government.
When President Reagan did the tax cuts, it increased. There was no decrease in the deficit. There was an increase and an increase in the national debt. I hate to say that. I love Reagan.
No, I understand that. But there was an increase in what the government took in.
Yes.
So the problem is not cutting taxes. It's spending and baseline budgeting.
I'm going to disagree with you on this point. Reagan had a short term when he cut capital gains taxes, and I'm completely behind that. There was a surge of revenue in the following year because people had been avoiding selling property or a lot of things because capital gains taxes were too high. However, in the third year, revenues to the government decreased relative to what they would have been, and in the fourth year and so on. You're going to think this is crazy as a bedbug, and it may not be directly due to tax, but when Bill Clinton was president and they raised the marginal tax rates, they didn't raise capital gains, they raised marginal tax rates, the deficit and the national debt started to come down.
When
George W. Bush lowered rates again, lowered the marginal tax rates again, the deficit started back up again.
Now, there is a clear indicator. Arthur Laffer is somebody that I've got a great deal of respect for. And he coined a curve and a point on the curve. If you have a 0% tax, you get 0% revenue. If you have 100% tax, you also have a 0% revenue because nobody's going to pay everything that they work for. They'll just stop working. That's what happened in the Soviet Union. So somewhere on that curve between 0 and 100%, there's a sweet spot. And that sweet spot moves around with the conditions of the economy and with the conditions of individual businesses. So if they lower taxes on a given point, sometimes if we're already above the Laffer point, they can increase their revenue. But it's not all the time, and some effort needs to go into where are we on the curve.
And right now, very frankly, there are no economists, none, who suggest that cutting marginal tax rates right now will increase the revenue to the government.
And this is why. The Affordable Care Act, we're not big fans. It's there. I don't think it should be gotten rid of immediately. That would cause a lot of damage. But we're not big fans. It's done some good things and it's done some bad things. If we look at that, because that was the last time we had a tax increase that is really easy to look at. We had a 3% surcharge that went on people that were making $250,000 plus as a couple. That increased revenue. That meant we got more money by raising.
Deficit came down when you increased that big revenue due to Obama.
Oh, nothing. The revenue going up didn't help a bit because we spent more than we raised.
And the same thing happened under, as you said, under Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan did not increase spending. He just cut taxes, and for 1 year we had a big revenue increase, and then after that we had a revenue decrease.
Back on their word from the side that I think you're coming from on decreasing spending,
right?
And it doesn't happen. And how can you have baseline spending? I mean, you know, where the public hears, they're gonna cut all these programs. Now they suggested instead of an automatic 8% increase, I mean, if you could increase my salary 8% every year and then increase it by the next 8%.
Where'd you get the 8%?
I'd be a millionaire.
Where'd you get the 8%?
$15 an hour.
Where'd you get the 8% number?
Well, whatever it is.
Right now, the government budgets for the various departments have generally been cut for several years.
Right.
Except for two areas. Social Security continues to go up with inflation because it's mandated by law, and we've increased defense spending.
This is something that's really important to throw out there right now. We got to look at something very basic. If you look at the entire revenue of taxes, all of it, put it all together, it pays for three things in the government. It pays for defense, it pays for Medicare, it pays for Social Security. That's it. It's all spent already. Anything else that we do after that is debt. So this is the third rail in politics. You don't want to talk about cutting Social Security. You don't want to talk about cutting defense or Medicare. But the reality is that we don't get enough in taxes to do anything but those three things, but we can't cut anything. I mean, we've cut department spending across the board, but we're spending more in other new areas. It's a little bit of,
you know,
it's like talking to a teenager that's never done anything with money before.
For instance, the Securities and Exchange Commission has had its budget cut consistently for many years. The IRS gets its budget cut consistently for many years. You go through all the, if you look at the individual agencies in the federal government, you look at their budget over the past several years, uniformly they've been cut.
But at the same time, we're adding new things elsewhere.
From the year before.
Right. Yeah, yeah, they're getting cut from 1 year to the next.
They get cut, and they never had a baseline spending where the department goes up, they hire more people. So we don't have a bloated government.
Oh, no, we have a bloated government.
We have a tight-run, well-organized government.
I hope you're being sarcastic.
Everything we get them.
I hope that's sarcasm, because we do have a bloated government.
Yeah, but, you know, we have a bloated government. But
does government get bigger every year? Let me ask you that.
No.
I don't know all the studies.
No, except for if you take the military. If you take the military out of it, it's really smaller now as far as numbers of employees of the United States government.
It's not just military, but you Border Patrol, for instance. Even during the Obama administration, we were adding to Border Patrol consistently year by year.
And that's what I'm trying to say. If you take out the ones that, like Border Patrol and the military, the ones that everybody seems to think we need more people, you'll actually look at the number of employees in the federal government, and it's been shrinking every year for about 10 years.
So the food stamps system.
That's state.
That's not federal.
The U.S. government doesn't put anything into that.
No, they give money to the state, and in the case of like Texas, they don't give any money to the state for the.
The state of Texas runs the CHIP program in Texas and the food stamp program.
There's federal money that goes to a lot of states, but we turned it down when we didn't expand our Medicaid.
Yeah, so we
for the Affordable Care
Texas
Act.
Basically. Food stamps is done by the state of Texas. That's not federal anymore.
Oh, I see.
So it's a lot of things that we assume going back many, many years because we heard that the federal government is doing something that they're really not doing anymore. And very, very frankly, if you do some research and you look at the number of U.S. government civil service employees in the United States, you may be amazed to find out. And I, this is a couple of years old, but 2 years ago, I remember looking at it and seeing that the civilian government workforce is now smaller than it was under John Kennedy.
What is important here is that where the spending is taking place, again, in those three big categories, we're spending more in those three categories every year, and we're spending more faster than we're cutting anywhere else.
Yeah, we're spending money in the military.
We're spending money in
Social Security.
The military.
Pardon me?
Right. We should just cut the military.
No, I don't know that we should cut the military. My problem.
Obama increased spending in the military?
Yes.
He cut spending and then increased spending.
He cut it at the beginning and then increased it towards the end.
It's really hard to find a party that you can say can be consistent. The Democrats' anti-military stance kind of fell by the waysides when they increased the spending. The Republicans' anti-deficit standpoint falls by the wayside every time they have the majority. George W. Bush was in office. He had a Republican Senate, Republican House, and our deficit went through the roof. Obama comes in and says, look at what he's done and what a horrible thing. You look at all the extra spending, and he did it more.
I'll be very frank with you. I don't think we need to cut military spending. I think the military probably needs a little more money than we're giving them. However, I can tell you that if we're going to spend money on the military and we're going to spend money on these things, I believe our taxes should be raised to reflect the money we're spending. You can't spend money on all these things and feel good and then cut taxes.
So you're telling me the deficit that we have now had nothing to do with Obama and his administration?
Let me back up. Let me tell you where
it started.
Nobody
said that.
I didn't say that.
Not only that, I said Obama spent more than Bush. The reality, you're looking for us to say something. You're hearing things we're not saying.
Let me tell you where it started. It started very simply. It started, we were running a surplus and paying down our debt, and under George W. Bush, a Republican-controlled Congress.
I'm not a Republican.
No, I'm not saying you're anything. Listen to me. We cut taxes dramatically and increased spending on two wars. We never paid for those wars. We spent over $1 trillion on fighting wars in Southwest Asia while cutting taxes.
And now let's say this. We were in and are in support of those wars. It's better to fight them over there than here.
But if you're going to fight a war,
you got to pay for it.
You ought to pay for it. You shouldn't cut taxes and then go fight a war with borrowed money.
And we're about out of time.
That's my opinion.
Thank you very much for the call, sir. We are the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake, and right over here is
Jeff,
and we are both McClures for some genetic reason. You gave me your name, and I didn't even have to marry you.
Man, that is causing strange things to happen in my brain.
So we are the Personal Wealth Coach, and we do give investment advice to people with high net worths that is fiduciary in nature.
We say things like, if you have excess money, you ought to save it or invest it conservatively.
Right. If you'd like to talk to us off the air, you can call our voicemail during the weekends, real live people during the week, locally at
254-947-1111.
You can reach that number toll-free, voicemail during the weekend, real live people during the week, 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can email us, and we use those emails in our radio program. So Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com. ThePersonalWealthCoach.com. You can go there for podcasts, newsletters. You can sign up for the newsletter and read it. We try to look at the economy not based on party lines, but based on fiscal responsibility. So keep that in mind when calling in. This has been the Personal Wealth Coach, and until next week,
the voice of Central Texas, KTEM AM 1400, Temple, Belton, Killeen.